Bhadram karne tishtinu yamadevaha Bhadram pashye makshabhirya chitraha Stirairangai stishtuvagum sastanubihi Pyashema devahi tanyadayuhu Swastina indro vrittashravaha Swastina pusha vishwavedaha Swastina sarsho arishtanemihi Swastino brahaspatir tatatu Om shanti 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 Vidyante hridaya grantihi Vidyante hridaya grantihi Chidyante sarva samshayaha Chidyante sarva samshayaha Kshiyante chasya karmani Kshiyante chasya karmani Tasmin drishte paravare Vidyate hridaya grantihi chidyante sarva samshayaha kshiyante cha asya karmani tasmin drishte paravare. Shankara introduces this asya paramatma jnanasya palam idam abhidhiyate. If this is the fruit of, phala means the fruit, right? Fruit, the result. This is the fruit of paramatma jnana, knowledge of the self as the whole, as the paramatma. So when he says asya now, this is the fruit of it all, of this knowledge. Bottom line, tasmin drishte paravare. When this is seen, tasmin this, drishte, drishte past passive participle from drish. So, absolute locative, tasmin drishte, when this is seen. When what? Paravare, when this which is both cause and effect, the whole. So when this atma, Brahman, the atma, paramatma, which is Brahman, when this is understood, when this which is the both the cause and effect, the subject and the object, para, that which comes first, avara, that which comes after. So used for cause and effect. Sometimes para and avara can also mean param, like Ishwara, for Ishwara. And that would be the para, the supreme, the infinite, and avara, the jiva. But normally, so Swamiji talked about all of those, but normally we just take cause and effect. So both the subject and the cause and the effect. So it's very beautiful. It's clay pot. You know, the cause or the substance, upadana karana, of the material cause, what is actually here, is Brahman. And then this Brahman manifests in the form of this entire creation as Ishwara. But this entire creation is nothing but Brahman, just like the pot is nothing but the clay. Right? So when you recognize that the conscious being that you are, this conscious being that you are, is the being which is the self of the entire creation. It is the being of the entire creation. Not just the being that you identify as this body. You can say in reference to this body, I am a conscious being, but your sense of consciousness stops there. And so you say, I am a conscious being, and then this body is the conscious being. But what needs to be recognized is that the conscious being that you are is the conscious being of the entire creation, not just of this body. So when you say, when this is seen, and by drishtam, they mean seen, means nishchiknyanam, where your knowledge is absolutely clear, is absolutely firm. That's how we use the word seen. It's not that you see the atma with your eyes, because you can't see the self, which is the self of the eyes, right? You can't see the self, which is the self of the mind. So the very being that you are has to be recognized. The self-evident being that you are has to be recognized as the very self of this creation. And so when that is seen, so tasmin drishte paravare, okay, then what? Vidyate hridaya granthihi. Granthi is a knot, the knot of the heart. The hridaya granthihi, vidyate, is untied, is released. So the knot of the heart is released. So a couple of things, the way that's taken, can be the knot, which is the knot of ignorance, is removed. But the way that I think is so profound in terms of this understanding the hridaya granthihi is the knot of the heart is that which ties the atma to the upadi. It's the ahankara, right? That's the effect of the ignorance. It's the ajnanam, really. The ajnanam, the ignorance that causes the mind to take yourself to be one with the upadi, to be one with the body, mind, sense organs complex. That ignorance, right, makes the ahankara is the I notion. So the I notion, the I am thought, is the ahankara. So the ahankara for jnani rises, I am, and resolves into Brahman. I am Brahman. That's where it's supposed to resolve, because that's who you are. Right? So when you have the I am thought, it should correctly label you. You should recognize your being as being the whole. But when the ajnanam is there for the mind, the ahankara rises, which is correctly labeling yourself experientially. The I am is labeling your being, but then it lassoes your being to the body or to the mind. That's the knot of the heart, is what ties that ahankara, which is a product of ignorance, that ties your being to this misidentification with the body, mind, sense organs. So now that knot of the heart is broken. That ignorance is removed. Right? Now when the ignorance is removed, the knot of the breaking that knot of the heart, now everything changes in terms of how you experience the world. The experience of the world is not going to go woo-woo on you. It will stay the same, right? The Atma will stay the same. The world will stay the same. But what is different is that your ahankara, the I notion, now no longer has that lasso. And so when the aham, I am, rises, it resolves into the conscious being that you are. And then that identification with the body doesn't take place. Okay. So when you say I am, it goes to awareness. This body enjoys consciousness. It's not like you gain knowledge and all of a sudden the body doesn't enjoy consciousness. You gain knowledge and all of a sudden the mind doesn't think or the sense organs don't see it. It isn't that at all. As long as you have a body, right, this body reflects consciousness. It enjoys consciousness. I mean, the consciousness that this body enjoys is the same consciousness as whether jnani, you have knowledge, or ajnani, you don't have knowledge. The consciousness that this body enjoys is the same. The consciousness that the mind enjoys is the same. The consciousness that the sense organs are enjoying is the same. It's not all that you gain knowledge and all of a sudden the consciousness is released to fling out here. Everything's the same. Except that the subjective projection, which is born of ignorance, is gone. The subjective projection, born of ignorance, that identifies your being with the body. When there's no reason for that identification, experientially there's no reason for it. Experientially yourself is always the same. That's the reality of yourself. And that is the inner experience. The inner experience is not that yourself is changing. The inner experience is that, you know, your body, which you're aware of, is changing and modifying. That's the experience. It is an experience that your mind is changing, that your moods are changing, that your thoughts are changing. That's an experience. True. But there is no such experience that your being is changing, that the I, that the me, is changing. There is no such experience. And when you recognize that, you can't believe. How is that superimposition possible? once you recognize yourself, because you are not changing and you are not modifying. So that becomes that. That's different. Right? That's different. The whole orientation of the mind changes with that recognition. Because now the mind, it goes on thinking and feeling and thinking, but it has a home, my presence, me, which is not thinking, which is not feeling, which is not doing anything except being the Satchitananda, the full being that it is. And that full being is absolutely changeless and constant. And that, so with that, the mind is free to go on thinking and feeling and do what it does. Because it's not hurting me. It's not changing me. And in fact, I am its support. Right? It has me. In fact, I'm the only thing that it does have. That yet yourself is the only thing you really have. Everything else is perishable. Everything else is changeable. Will change. It'll die. Everything. Everything external to your body is perishable, untrustworthy. It will go. It may not want to be untrustworthy, but by nature, it will go. That's the reality. The reality is that your body also will go. It will change. It'll grow old. Sometimes it feels good. Sometimes it's sick. Eventually, it'll die. That's the reality, you know? And so, if your being is this body, then you're in trouble. Because it will go. Your mind will do what it does. Like Swamiji says that, I mean, his little mantra for me is, oh, when he said, you know, my mind is all kinds of funny things. So? So what? It does. It takes in, you know, thousands and thousands of stimulation at every moment after moment after moment after moment. And it pours it out. Takes it in and pours it out. It does what it does. Yeah. But that's not you. And so the stability of your being, right, the mind recognizes. And the ahankara, the I notion, labels. And so instead of I am the mind, I am the body, mind, sense organs, which is the Ajnani's reality. You know, like the kid walking along and seeing a snake. For a rope, the snake is his reality. There's no snake there. That doesn't matter. That's his reality. And so if I take myself to be the body, that's my reality. It's not true. But the whole mind is playing off of that mistake. For Ajnani, that mistake isn't there. And if the subject, the me, is recognized, if the mind has recognized, has made that differentiation, then with the unfoldment of Vedanta, it doesn't stop there, right? Because if I, my being, is changeless, right? It's not going to be, and it's not objectifiable, it's not subject to time, my presence is not limited by anything. And then you start looking at your experience differently, you know? My presence, my being, instead of being something which is confined in the body, right, becomes the self-evident consciousness, which is the being of all of this. And just, I want you to just think about it in terms of your experience. Once you recognize the changelessness of your own being, that you're not an object that you're looking at, right, then this body, which is objectified, belongs to the creation. Not to you, because the body changes, you don't change. So this belongs to the creation. Your mind belongs to the creation. The sense organs belong to the creation. And so my being is the being of what? It's the being of the creation. Not just the being of me. This me as an individual, this body is part of the creation. My sense organs are part of the creation. My mind is part of the creation. Part of this. My being, the conscious being, is the self, the existent being of all of this, not just of this body. And that's, in fact, exactly what your experience is. There's nothing in your experience that's away from being and consciousness. The problem comes with this Dehatma Buddhi. Once the Ahankara says, I am this, then consciousness stops here. your experience of existence stops here, and you say, I am this. And then I look out through my eyes at you. Right? And so there's a conscious being, inertness, conscious being, bubbles of consciousness. That's how we are interpreting our experience. But if you, in your mind through knowledge, if you break that Dehatma Buddhi, then actually, what here in this experience that you're of this room is away from consciousness, is away from being known, is away from existence, from being. You can say, I am, and you say, it is, it is, it is, it is, it is. There is nothing that's away from being. And the being that you experience is your being. So when that's understood, the being that is the experience of your own amness, not experience as an object, but just the conscious being that you are, that being is now not contained. What's containing you? Nothing, because there's nothing apart from that experience. Let's put it this way. You cannot have an experience that is devoid of being and knownness, which is the satchit. It's impossible to have that experience. What you don't recognize is that that satchit is invariable. It never changes. And that satchit, which is invariable, is not an object. It is the content of all objects, including your body. It's the content of all objects, including your body. Means it's not, if it's the content of all objects, including your body, it means it's the self of all objects, not just the self of your body. And so what you have to do is look at what is your sat-chit experience, the conscious existent experience, which is your being, that self-evident experience. What is that? This presence, this me presence that's sitting here. And then see, you just ask yourself, is your own this me, the self, your own presence, is it contained at all? So you just have to relax and recognize that. It isn't contained. And there's no way of changing it. So when that is seen, when that Atma is liberated like that, then you recognize I am Brahman. That's the Hridaya Granthi. That's the knot of the heart that needs to be cut. You know? And it's the ahanta. What you're snipping is the rope or the lasso of the ahankara, which has taken the self-experience and improperly identified it with the body, mind, sense organs. See, that's what makes you limited. There is no limitation. The ignorance of the mind creates that illusion. You know, but when you analyze your experience, it isn't true. What is true is that yourself is always the same. And since that is true, the mind need do nothing about it except recognize it. Mm-hmm. It's a fact. So you either see it or you don't. But because it's a fact, it's there to be seen. You're not going to create it. You're not going to reach it. You know, you're not going to imagine it. You're only going to notice it. Right? Because it's there to be noticed. And that's the jnana, right? So when this, the Atma is seen, when this is understood, when it is seen, that knot of the heart, the ahankara, that is cut. And then chidyante sarvasham samshayaha. All doubts, now, chidyante are cut. Sarva all samshayaha. All of the doubts that come up in reference to the creation, there's different types of doubts. Shankara just says, in all of our pursuits of knowledge in this world, there's always doubt. We don't really know what it is. We don't really know the truth of it in our experience of the creation. There's always a sense of doubt. There's always a sense of not knowing what's going on. All of those doubts are cut. Because what is going on is this. Satyam mitya. That's the truth of the whole thing. The knowledge that you experience, nature of the creation, let me put it like this. Say you want to know the reality of the creation. Say you want to know the reality of the ocean. What is the truth in all of these waves? Where's the truth of the whole thing? What's really going on here? Well, what's really going on is satyam mitya. Right? What's really going on is that there's one non-dual water that is the truth and the substance, totally, 100% substance, of all of the nama-rupas that we call the waves. So what is the truth of this? There is one conscious being, which is my being. And that being is the very self of all of this. There, in fact, is nothing else. Now, if there was something else, there's a problem. Because as soon as you enter into duality, there's no way of removing doubts. Right? Because everything is infinitely divisible, and everything can be viewed from an infinite number of standpoints. This is one of the things that the Jains really contributed to knowledge. The fact that you can't know anything. You can never figure anything out. Because all you have to do is change your standpoint, and then everything is different. Or you have to dissect it in a little different way. And so the laws are infinite and the standpoints are infinite. So how can you get to the bottom of anything? How can you ever feel that something is known? Say, for instance, like this. It's a big problem, actually. Say you have an object and you want to know, well, what is this object really? What is it? Let's look inside and try to find, what is this object really made of? What are its components? Because we know anyway that all objects are kind of conglomerates. But say we want to say, well, let's, dissect this and really see, what it is. And get all the parts. So that we can see it. This is made of this part and this part and this part and this part. It's put together in this way and this way and this way and this way and this way. And boom, we have the object. Now we understand that. No doubt, that's what it is. Do you think that's possible to do? Well, it's not possible. Because every single part is infinitely divisible into smaller parts. And so when are you going to stop? When are you going to stop the infinite division to be able to then say, here, this is what this thing is. This is what we call maya. Maya, you can never get to the bottom of it. You can never solve the puzzle because everything is infinitely divisible, is viewed from an infinite number of standpoints, and is subject to change. And that itself is another huge problem. Right? You, not only can you not dissect it to be able to find what is actually going on here because there's too much going on. What is going on is infinite, right? In terms of relationship, because every part is infinitely divisible. Infinite is a big word. But if you say infinite, forget it. You can't get to the bottom of it. Infinite means there's no end. There's no end. As long as you're within time, as long as you're within space, you can divide it. The only thing you have to do now then is to jump out of time and out of space. What do you have then? Brahman. You have Brahman. So, this sarva samshaya, the resolution of all doubt, is because you get to the bottom. You get to the bottom of what is actually here. And you know that. And what is actually here is something that can be known. Now, that's interesting, because there's nothing in the creation that can be known. Everybody understand why that is? That you can't find anything to know. It's all infinitely divisible and continually changing, infinite standpoint. So you can't find anything to know. The only thing that you can know, really, is the Atma. That's all. And the reason for that is that it's not divisible. There are not standpoints. There are not infinite standpoints. There are no standpoints. There are not infinite parts. There are no parts. There is no time. There is no change. You can't get to the right side of it or the left side or up or down or behind because the Atma is non-dual and it is all there is. And so you either know it or you don't. You recognize it or you don't. You don't recognize it this way or that way. You don't recognize the top or the bottom. You don't recognize this part or that part. That's what we mean. Consciousness is consciousness. It's not superconsciousness. There's no such thing as superconsciousness, spiritual consciousness, you know. There's nothing but consciousness. There's not two types. And there's not a more profound consciousness. You know, there's not a consciousness to reach. There is only consciousness. And it is non-dual. And so, that being, and being non-dual, one without a second, that consciousness, not being an object, not having no parts, who is that consciousness going to be? What is your relationship to that consciousness? You either are it, or what? You're not here. Because there's not two consciousness, you know. So the consciousness with which is the consciousness that you are. Okay, now this is the thing to understand here. The consciousness that is the consciousness that you are. Are you having, at this moment, and I mean with or without knowledge, but I want you to kind of understand the logic here. Is your self-experience of being a conscious being partial or complete? Are you having the whole consciousness experience? Or are you having a partial consciousness experience? It has to be the whole consciousness experience because there's nothing but consciousness. There's not sides to it. And I'll tell you how this is how we get confused on this. If you hold a mirror, shiny, nice, clean mirror, up to a clear blue sky, if you look up in the sky, there's just space there. There's no differentiation. There's no clouds in the sky. It's just like looking up into space. Now, if you hold a mirror up into space, right, that mirror is only reflecting a little bit of that infinite space. Is that true? The mirror, the infinite space is there, but this mirror is only reflecting as much of that infinite space as the little mirror can contain. And so this is a delusion that sometimes comes to us around understanding this knowledge, because when we think of the Atma as being all that is, somehow the mind will frequently give a spatial dimension to it. And then we look at, because, look, this creation is infinite in size, right? It's an infinite manifestation. So it's infinite in size. And so then we think that if the Atma is the self of the entire creation, then the Atma must be infinite in size. So now I'm this so spatially infinite. So now here I am as a jiva. I am as a jiva, this body, mind, sense organs. See, I'm creating a doubt for you. Screwing everybody up. So now here we are in this creation, which is of infinite size, vast space. And the conscious being, right, is the self of that whole. So it also must be. We tend to give spatial dimension to it. And so now, here I am. This little jiva. Body, mind, sense organs. And the amount of the Atma this jiva must be experiencing is just this size. Even though the Atma is huge, right? It's huge. I'm only experiencing this much. Like my mind's a little mirror reflecting the Atma. That's because we want to give spatial dimension to the Atma. The Atma yourself has no spatial dimension. If you have a dream, the whole space, space, air, fire, water, earth, the dream creation, comes from non-dual consciousness that has no space. The space comes as part of the creation. The Atma doesn't have space. The Atma doesn't have a right side or left side. It's not big or little. It's the very substance, which is the self of the whole creation that has a concept of size only from within it, right? Do you see how that is? Say you're sitting here and you close your eyes and you imagine like a meadow. I use the meadow analogy. You imagine a meadow. Has your size stretched out there to feel the meadow? I don't think so. When you get rid of that imagination, the space is gone. The space belongs to the imagination, not to your being. So your being has no size. It's not spread out. So the being that you are is the being, which is the self, the being, the self that you are, when you say me, that conscious being, that conscious being is the self of the creation. It doesn't change to become the creation. It doesn't have dimension because it's the only existent thing that there is. Right? It's the only thing that is there. Right? If it's the only thing that is there, there's nothing, there's not going to be any depth or any size or anything like that. There's just pure homogeneous me. And that me, if you think about now, just let your mind just kind of rest in your own self-recognition, your own presence. And as you have your eyes open, you can, if you just relax, you can recognize that your being, the me, your sense of self, is not something contained. It has nothing to do with containment. It is always exactly the same. And in fact, wherever the body goes within this spatial dimension, because here we are, body, mind, sense, organs, and you're walking around through space, right? I walk across the room, right? Am I walking across the room? You have a dream. Your being is the self of the dream. You're identified with the character in the dream, and the character walks across the room, okay, in the dream. Are you walking across the room? The one from whom the dream has come. As the character moves across the space, you see, you're dreaming this room. You're a character in the room. You walk across the room. Is your being moving? Is the Atma moving? Not at all. And then the dream goes away. What happens to you, the Atma, your being? Nothing. Nothing at all. Nothing ever happens to you in any way. You know? So now, it is this being that you are that doesn't have any competition. It doesn't have anything else. There's nothing else there to look at it from this direction or that direction. And so when this is understand, you've gotten to the bottom of it. So there's no doubt. The doubts are resolved because you've gotten to the truth of the nature of being itself. So that's that sarva samshayaha chidyante. All of the doubts are removed because you've discovered what it is. You've discovered the essential nature of things. Now, before that discovery, there's a lot of doubts for the student that need to be dealt with. The Vedanta, the Upanishads, are a pramana. They're a means of knowledge to take the student to this recognition, to see it, that drishta, to see it so that it's known, to know it without to know it clearly. You know, they use an example like an amala fruit, which is a small little fruit. Use an example. You have to see this like an amla fruit in the palm of your hand, where you look at it and you see the whole thing. You understand. You see it. It's clear. You know. So the Upanishads are a teaching methodology to take the mind of the student step by step by step to see that. But say you say, how can you say the Upanishads are a pramana? A teaching methodology. How can you say that they are a valid means of knowledge? So the student can bring up, you know, samshayas, these doubts around whether or not this is even a pramana, a means of knowledge that I should try. That's a doubt. That's a doubt before you even get to the knowledge. And so that's a doubt the student has. That doubt has to be answered. Yeah. So there's a lot of logics that we can give to the student. So the student will say, okay, okay, I'll try. Because the fact is, if something posits itself as a pramana, as a means of knowledge for seeing something, in order for you to test out that to see if it's true, you have to use it. There's no way around that. It's like your eyes are a pramana for seeing color. How do you know that? Because somebody tells you? Would that solve the problem? I don't think so. For you to know that the eyes are a pramana for seeing color, you have to use it. What if you said, Swamiji does a long joke on this, somebody's eyes are shut, you know, bandaged, and the eyes have been blind and now they've been operated on. And apparently everything should be fine if he would open his eyes to test it out. Right? Because he had cataract surgery and everything seems to have gone well. But he wanted the doctor to convince him before he attempted to open his eyes. He wanted the doctor, you know, to convince him that he could see. Now, what can the doctor say? He could say, well, you know, the surgery went very, very well. And from all the analysis that we did, you know, the removal of the cataract, I don't see there was any problem. You know, you should be able to see. It should work. You know, I've done thousands of these operations. They've always worked. Very rarely would there be a problem. Really, honestly, and I think this will, you'll be able to see. Well, prove it to me. Okay, I'll prove it to you. On the count of three, you open your eyes, and then we will see. This is a pramana, you know. Even whether it's, whether you're using inference or presumption, the pramanas we have as a just at our disposal as human beings, these pramanas, they establish themselves by using them, you know. And then by you can question, do manana, over, based upon what you see, then you can question, you know, and shake that pramana to make sure that it's giving you valid knowledge. But you have to use the pramana. And the Upanishads are like that. The pramana, the mind, the adhikari, the student, needs to be willing to use that pramana. And now the thing is, so say, students are willing to use the pramana. It's with an attitude. You use an attitude of, yes, let me try this. That's what we call shraddha. Shraddha is that attitude that just says, yes, I want to see what the Upanishad has to say. I feel it has something to show me, so I want to see. Yes, I want to use my eyes because I want to see, I want to know what the eyes have to show me. I want to see through this pramana. And so I want to use those eyes so that I can see. And then see and analyze the data. And so here, I want to see what this pramana, the Upanishad pramana, has to show me. And so then the student, with that attitude, is available. The mind is available to use that pramana. So that samshaya is gone. It's been worked through. Then we have, all right, the Shruti, though, is revealing something. I'm exposing myself to the Shruti as a pramana. I'm trusting in the Shruti to reveal something to me. Now it makes me see something, and then I can have the samshaya. Is that true? Is that what the Shruti is revealing to me? Is that true? Could it be like this? Maybe it could be like that. Maybe it means this, or maybe it means that. So then the samshaya is all of the doubts around what we call the pramaya, that thing which is actually being revealed by the Shruti. So then, that's where manana comes in. That's where the Upanishads are giving an unfolding. The Shruti is unfolding a vision for you. Right? And then the mind questions, well, yeah, but what about this and what about that? And all of those doubts need to be resolved. Right? And that's the job of the teaching. That's the job of the Upanishad and of the teacher and of the whole tradition, you know, to make all, to take the whole vision. The Upanishad itself does it. It goes, it'll take one point, one unfoldment, and do that unfoldment for you, and then it'll start, take another tact. Do that unfoldment for you, and then it'll take another one, and do that unfoldment for you, looking at the same thing from all many, many different standpoints. And then Shankara in his bhasha, or in Swamiji's commentaries, or the different bhashas that are available, they'll push it even further because their students asked like this. You know, around this verse, their students had this particular question. And so they'll unfold that, you know, based on what all of the Upanishads say. So that the mind, so that your mind sees. It is free from doubt. That's why this tasmin drishte, when that is seen, so drishta is very important there. When that is seen, means it's known. When what is known? When this Atma is known as being both the cause and effect, it's where I recognize that my being is the self of this whole creation. When that is seen, and that means all of those doubts have been removed around the pramana and also around what the pramana has to reveal, all of those doubts have been removed, then the problem is solved. The ahankara, which caused all the problems, the ajnanam, the ignorance, which was attached to that ahankara, that caused all of this identification, that is no longer there because the ahankara resolves into myself. And the satyam mitya, I know. I recognize all this as my being. And I recognize always the changelessness of my being. You never once you have differentiated your being, you can never make yourself change again. It is not possible. Even if your mind is acting up. So your mind is, you know, still has some maturing, it has some lack of vairagya, it has this problem and that problem. That's all taking place in you, which is not changing. Right? So you remain the constant, the stable one, amidst all of this activity that goes on. And in the light of that knowledge, when the mind has that knowledge, then it takes its time to work through all of the, you know, lifetimes of ignorant behavior. It untangles itself. And it untangles itself in your presence. In the presence of yourself, which is so benign. Yourself is so benign. And then the mind, as it discovers the benign nature of just the being that you are, it is free to untangle. Right? Because it doesn't hurt, you're not hurt. You're the constant support. That's what needs to be recognized. When that is recognized, then he says, kshiyante cha asya karmani, all of the karmas are destroyed. For the jivanmukta, for the one who has self-knowledge, all of the karmas that cause, when we look at the karmas that cause you to take birth after birth after birth, it's prior karmas, my sanchitta karmas, actually my whole collection of karmas that are now fructifying as prarabdha karma to live out this life. So these karmas are fructifying. Right? And while these karmas are fructifying, I'm doing new karmas. Those are called the agami karmas. And those agami karmas that I'm doing, that using my free will I'm doing all of these karmas, those karmas I'm accruing what we call adrishta, punya and papa, which will go into my sanchitta account, and then those will then fructify for the next life where I'll start again, exhausting the prarabdha karma, and then I'll be collecting agami karmas, doing new karmas. Those will go into the sanchitta, and then depending upon the quality of this life, those sanchitta karmas will then propel me on to another life. And it goes on and on and on. So, all the while, I'm the karta, right? I'm the one who now has all of the sanchitta karmas, the infinite number of sanchitta karmas. And now here I am living with these prarabdha karmas, and I'm collecting all these agami karmas, as though I'm a doer. But the jnani recognizes the atma, me. Atma, the self, is not doing anything. And never has. Your being is not a karta. The mind and the body, there's all kinds of activities going on. Is atma doing anything? Is the conscious being doing anything? To have prarabdha karma, to have sanchitta karma, to have agami karma. To have karma for the atma has to be doing something, right? It has to be collecting karma. It has to have an association with the karma. If that were true, how could I be you? How could I be you? It would be a big mass of karmas tied together. And I would have to be an object in the creation. You know, to have doership. So now, what that means is that you're the conscious being that you are is not in the process of, is not acting. If you think of yourself right now, just your own presence, just me, just the conscious presence that you are, what are you doing? What is consciousness doing? What is the me doing? The sense organs are acting. The thoughts are acting, right? In the sense they're changing, one thought after another after another. The body is acting and moving around. What about consciousness, me, your own presence? What is it doing? Is it an object in the creation that you're illumining it doing something? Say no. Is it knowing something as an action? No. It is self-evident knowledge, self-evident consciousness, but it is not performing a function of knowing. It is knowledge, and so pure knowledge, pure consciousness. And so everything is known because of it, but it's not performing a function of knowing. It is not looking at anything. It's not thinking about anything. But thoughts take place, and those thoughts that take place are not away from me. Right? Perceptions take place. The perceptions are not away from me. I am the self of the thoughts. I'm the self of the perceptions. I am the self of the body. But that doesn't mean I'm doing anything. Now, when you meditate and you relax your body and mind and pull everything in, just to be with yourself, do you notice yourself doing anything? You know, when you shut everything down, right? Because the mind can be active, that's doing something. You make that quiet. You relax your body, make that quiet. Pull your sense organs in, make all of that quiet. So now you've quietened all those things that can be very active. But what are you left with? Yourself, the one that illumines all of those things, is it doing anything? Can it do anything? Say no. It's non-dual. It's stable. It's the stable being of this creation. It is not performing any doing whatsoever. If that's the case, how can it have karma? How can the Atma have karma? How can it even have sanchitta karma or prarabdha karma or agami karma? Those karmas belong to the upadhi. Mm. And so, when the mind, the ahankara, when that ignorance is not there and the ahankara is no longer identified with the upadhi, the ahankara is resolved into the Atma. Okay? When this body dies, so see if you can follow this. When this body dies, where is the jiva? When the body dies, where's the jiva? Gone, because the jiva, the one who transmigrates, is no more. Because there's no ignorance to identify your being with the upadi. So that's why for a person who has self-knowledge, once you're in this physical body, you know, this prarabdha is going to run itself out because it's an empirical reality. So it'll run itself out and you'll enjoy all of the experiences that are that belong to your prarabdha. You'll enjoy all of that. And the prarabdha will end, body will die. Okay? But what about you? Will you continue on as a sukshma sharira to take another body? No, and the reason is because there's no ahankara there. There's no attachment. There's no ajnanam there. For an identification to continue with the sukshma, the subtle body. Because the ahankara already while living is identified with your being. And so now, what happens with that is when your being, when the body drops, we say the body goes back into its elements. The sukshma sharira, the subtle body, goes back into its subtle elements. Because there's no ignorance there holding it together. So then who are you then? What's left? And this body drops for the Jivan Mukta, for the Jnani, what's left? The body drops, karma's over. Who are you then? Well, you are exactly who you've always been. You are the self who is Ishwara. So what is left? Ishwara. And that is who you are. You are Ishwara. Right? This upadi is no more. Think of it like this. You have a dream. You're having a dream. You're a character in the dream. But actually, who are you really? You're the self of the dream. And you're the one from whom the whole dream comes. So that's you. That's the reality. You're the whole. Right? But you're identified with the character in the dream. So now, even though you are the whole, right? You're the self. And the one from whom the whole manifestation has come, the whole dream has come, that's the reality. But you're identified with a character within it, even though you are the whole. Now this character needs to get self-knowledge. Because it becomes a mumukshu. So the character gets self-knowledge, as goes to a teacher, gets the guru, gets self-knowledge. When that character, when that body dies, there is nothing. There is nothing. There is no ahankara there to keep any type of transmigration going on. Because even from the standpoint of that individual, the self-identification is with the self, which is the self of the whole. And so there, that jivatvam is gone. But what the jnani recognizes is that I never have had any karma. The karma doesn't belong to the atma. And you are the Atma. So all of the karmas are negated. They are good as long as the upadi and as long as the identification is there. But they never have been belonged to the self. That's why in the Bhagavad Gita, in the Katha Upanishad, there's extreme verses. The one who thinks that you are a killer or the killed, when they're using it, especially in the Bhagavad Gita, if you think the Atma is a killer, or that it can be killed, neither knows. The one who thinks that the Atma can be a killer, nor the one, and the one who thinks the Atma can be killed, neither person knows. Because the Atma can neither kill nor be killed, nor cause anyone to kill. Because your being is free from that kartritvam. Okay? We'll stop there. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.